Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
A lack of service.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. If we needed an unmistakable signal the economy is shrinking, here it is. Activity in the service sector fell big time in January. We get this number every month from the Institute of Supply Management. December's reading was 54. January's was 42. Any reading below 50 means contraction. And to put this in perspective, that reading hasn't been below 50 since March of 2003. The service companies involved in this said they're getting hit by a weakening economy and higher costs. Guess what's happening on Wall Street? All the major indexes are down close to 2% in the first 20 minutes. The Dow is down 209 points to 12,425. The NASDAQ has dropped 38. The S&P 500 has dropped 25. European shares are down about 2% in the last hour. In Asia today, the markets fell almost 1%. One thing a recession might bring is lower oil prices. Oil fell $1.50 today to $88 a barrel. Oil companies might not be able to make record profits again this year. Last year, Exxon made enough money to buy 4 tanks of gas for every car in America. Shell set a record as well. BP is another story. Here's Stephen Beard reporting from London.
BP's profit for 2007 is down 22% on the previous year. The company's cutting around 5,000 jobs. At a time when the price of oil is hovering around $90 a barrel, this result seems almost bizarre, but not totally unexpected. Refining in the U.S. was the problem. Jim Washer of Petroleum Intelligence Weekly says the Texas City refinery explosion in 2005 knocked out a lot of capacity. And the other big U.S. refining plant had maintenance issues.
That's been a very profitable part of the business of late. So to have two major plants in the US not functioning properly over a period of a year, 18 months, obviously affects the bottom line.
But analysts say BP's prospects now look much better. This year, the two refineries are expected to resume full production, and the company seems to have done a better job than its rivals in finding new oil and gas reserves. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, February 5th on Marketplace.org. The war of words over the president's $3 trillion budget will only get louder today. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and White House Budget Director Jim Nussel are on Capitol Hill for hearings. Given the reaction so far, those two are in for an earful from some members of Congress. Jeremy Hobson reports from Washington.
North Dakota Democrat Kent Conrad, who chairs the Senate Budget Committee, will be leading the attack on the administration today. He says the budget proposal leaves out the full cost of Iraq and a permanent patch for the alternative minimum tax.
They just aren't being square with the American people.
Even Brian Riedel of the Conservative Heritage Foundation says the president should have made a, quote, true estimate of some of the nation's looming financial commitments. But he did applaud the president for proposing to rein in entitlement programs.
I'm not 100% pleased with the president's budget, but it's impossible to please everybody.
Riedel says it will be quite the challenge to deal with an estimated $410 billion deficit in a presidential election year. Senator Conrad's with him on that one.
Somebody asked me if this was debt on arrival, and I said it was debt on departure. You know, you're getting ready to leave town, you're going to leave a debt bomb behind.
In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
This week, one of the biggest unions is holding its annual legislative conference. That would be the United Auto Workers. Steve Tripoli has more.
The UAW's top issues this election year are health care, labor-friendly trade agreements, and union organizing rights. Gary Chason's a labor expert at Clark University in Massachusetts. He says the UAW will push those issues by backing Democrats, but mostly not with cash.
The UAW, like most unions, doesn't really concentrate its effort in direct funding, but rather provides the ground troops.
Chason says those ground troops are more fired up than usual this year. That's because they've seen that many of their issues reach beyond the bargaining table.
They're beginning to realize that many of the problems they face are problems that are most directly resolved through political action rather than strikes or negotiations.
And despite small numbers among workers, Chason says unions are still an election year force.
They're one of the few organizations that can really mobilize members in election campaigns.
He says union endorsements of candidates still matter, too. So far, the UAW is not backing anyone. I'm Steve Tripoli from Marketplace.
The top fashion designers are in New York City this week, showing off their fall collections. So it's a chance for people to get a look at what a recession looks like when it's coming down the runway. Jill Barshay has more.
Usually there's a frivolous buzz surrounding Fashion Week, a twice-a-year extravaganza of celebrities and models on Fifth Avenue. But this year, the city seems, well, consumed with Wall Street losses and dwindling bonus checks. Designers feel the gloom, too. Jane Barnes is a luxury menswear designer. For her fall 2008 line, she's toned down the color so that men can get more wear out of their $300 shirt.
So, yeah, I'll be doing a lot of blue because that means he'll have a lot to wear it with. So I work a lot of the collection around blue and around black during these times.
But in a strategic approach to the recession, Barnes is weaving a shirt with 48 muted colors.
Because we think that our customer has to say, oh, I have to have that. I must have that. You know, I can't wait until times are better. It may not be here again.
Saks Fifth Avenue and Neiman Marcus have asked Barnes to make more shirts under $200, so she's using more cotton and less silk. For women, designers this week are going back to the straight-laced 1950s and early 1960s. Think Jackie O and Grace Kelly with their tailored suits and full skirts. Designer Michael Kors has jettisoned his baby doll mini dresses and platform shoes. Some fashion critics are calling it comfort food for turbulent times. Others are saying that women are simply sick of the bohemian look. Arthur Zaskowitz is the senior financial editor at Women's Wear Daily. He says in the past, recessions have inspired fashion.
During the early 90s, right, grunge hit the market. That was driven by kind of an economic downturn in the early 1990s, right? It was a reaction to not only the economy, but the state of mind of the consumer.
But for now, a nostalgic sense of stability and prosperity is here again. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
Have you gotten your fill of election coverage yet? I hope not. There's a long way to go, even after today's Super Tuesday voting. The last presidential election, political books did very well. Books from President Clinton, Bob Woodward, and The Daily Show all hit the bestseller lists. But recently, political book sales haven't been doing so well. More now from Ashley Milne-Tite.
Last year was a letdown for political publishers. Valerie Plame's book flopped, and Coulter's latest anti-liberal critique hasn't sold half as well as her last, published in 2004. Doug Muzio teaches public affairs at New York City's Baruch College. He says during the last election season, politics was still dominated by one polarizing figure, and his policies stirred up a left-right loathing that got people reading.
It was stimulated by George Bush, both pro and con. It's 4 years later. George Bush is somewhat of an irrelevancy. He doesn't generate the heat that he once did.
Still, the publishing cycle hasn't slowed. There are 100 political titles on publishers' spring lists. There's always the possibility of a surprise bestseller. In 2004, it was the anti-Kerry book, Unfit for Command. But Jim Milliot of Publishers Weekly says an election year can pose a problem for publishers. The closer the election gets, books about politics have to compete for publicity with the real thing.
They're not going to be publishing some of their high-profile books around the election because there's just no media time. You're not going to get on the Today Show. You're not going to get on Tim Russert.
Books have to compete for readers as well. Doug Muzio says political junkies like him are addicted to all forms of election coverage this time round, whether it be newspapers, television, radio, or blogs.
You know, every day you wake up and you read the news and you can get into it. Reading a book sort of diverts you from the immediacy of the fix.
Jim Milliot says publishers are hoping 2009 could be a potentially blockbuster year. He says as soon as the election is over, they'll be busy pursuing potential authors who haven't yet told all.
And then going running around, signing up whoever hasn't written a book in the cabinet, and of course, getting the president himself.
Readers may have to wait a few years for that one. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
It's not only Super Tuesday, it's Fat Tuesday. And I just learned this morning about a Fat Tuesday tradition that comes from Eastern Europe, Paczki. It's spelled P-A-C-K-Z-I. Our show's producer has a Polish background, and she was telling me that on Fat Tuesday, Polish bakeries rake in the dough, selling these doughy treats. So we called up the Martha Washington Bakery in Hamtramck, Michigan. Sandy Bakich is working there. Sandy, I'm new to this. What exactly are Paczki?
It's a scrumptious fried pastry that is yeast-raised and filled with a variety of fillings.
Like what?
Well, like originals were raspberry and prune, but then as humans evolve, we've got raspberry, strawberry, blueberry, cherry, apple. We've got the Bavarian cream, chocolate Bavarian, buttercream, plain sugar, you name it.
That sounds pretty good.
It is.
And what's it like at your store today?
Oh, it's out the door.
The line's out the door. And this is an Eastern European tradition?
Yes, it is. The tradition was, well, when Lent started, you can't eat the fats.
Uh-huh.
So in order to use up the fats in the house, because it's not going to last in the summertime, I guess grandma's created these wonderful scrumptious pastries.
Well, Sandy, I'll let you get back to work, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Sandy Bakich at the Martha Washington Bakery in Hamtramck, Michigan. In Los Angeles, I'm hungry. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.